We're gonna take a trip right now. Like we always do about this time.
This is a journey into sound. Break it
down. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. On this week's show, I'll preview two of the biggest music festivals in Indiana. Up first, we'll take a look at this year's Indy Jazz Fest. It's happening from now until September 30th at venues around Indianapolis. I'll speak with two of the festival's headliners, Stanley Clark and Sheila E. And during the second half of this week's show, I'll preview the Lotus World Music and Arts Festival. It's happening September 28th to October 1st in Bloomington. This is the 30th annual edition of Lotus Fest, and this year's lineup features over 20 international artists and groups. We'll start this week's show with words and music from the bassist and composer Stanley Clark. Stanley Clark is a 5-time Grammy winner and a 2022 recipient of the National Endowment for the Arts Jazz Masters Fellowship. Stanley Clark is widely regarded as one of the most innovative and influential bass virtuosos of all time. Clark rose to prominence during the jazz fusion era of the early 1970s. He co-founded the fusion supergroup Return to Forever with pianist Chick Corea. During his career, Clark has recorded and performed with the greatest icons of jazz, from Wayne Shorter to Herbie Hancock. But his influence has not been limited to jazz alone. Clark's work has been embraced by rock and roll musicians, too. Stanley Clark has recorded and performed with Paul McCartney, Jeff Beck, Keith Richards, and Ronnie Wood. Let's join my conversation with Stanley Clark. Stanley, it's an honor to have you on the show today. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to talk to you about this great festival.
Yeah, and you'll be playing here at the Indy Jazz Fest on September 30 at White River State Park. On that theme, if you don't mind, I'd like to ask you about a few of the Indianapolis jazz legends you've worked with over the years. And foremost among these is Freddie Hubbard, one of our greatest jazz heroes in Naptown. You performed and recorded extensively with Freddie. Anything you want to say about your work with Freddie or his legacy in jazz?
Yeah, Freddie is known amongst all the jazz musicians from, and I can honestly say from all generations, is that he was kind of the jazzman's jazzman. He was like a cut above most, because I would say, for me personally, he's one of my top five improvisers of all time, and that includes John Coltrane and Miles Davis and Dexter Gordon, Charlie Parker. I was very lucky because Freddie was a kind of a guy. Just a real quick story how I met Freddie. I was playing with Horace Silver at a club in New York, infamous club, Wild Club. It was called Slugs. All kinds of people came in there. And I was finishing playing, and he came up to me with Lee Morgan, the trumpet player. And we went out that night. I was probably 18 years old. I don't know what he was doing, showing me the ropes or whatever, but I ended up at this apartment with all these guys, and we had a lot of fun. Talking about music and drinking and, you know, just having a lot of fun. And that's the thing I liked about Freddie, was that he was a very open, colorful guy. You know, just he was, you know, even though he was a jazz musician, he, you know, and sometimes people attribute that to being like introspective or something like that. He was very open, very outwardly, and was always nice to me. And every time I played with him, he was nice, and I had him on some of my records when I was very young, when he could have very easily said, nah, but he came by and played because he liked young musicians too. It was important for him to make for our music that it kept going, that the young musicians got a chance to play with the older musicians.
You played on three of Freddie's albums as a leader, and two of those records featured the Indianapolis trombonist Phil Ranelin, who is best known for his association with the Tribe Collective in Detroit. But Phil grew up in Naptown and went to the same school as Freddie, Arsenal Tech. Do you remember working with Phil? Do you have any memories of him?
Sure, I remember. He was he's a tremendous musician, you know. I didn't know him as well as I knew Freddie, but knew of him and knew his name, obviously. And but like I said, that Freddie was just more, I don't know, what's the word, effusive with his communication. You know, he really let it out. So it was just only natural, particularly when you're young, you go with the guy that's the friendliest. Yeah. Not that Phil wasn't, but the
he's
friendliest.
Quiet. Yeah, quiet guy. And the Griffin brothers are a legendary musical family here in Indianapolis. And Rayford Griffin, a fantastic drummer, played in your band during the 1980s. Here in Indianapolis, he's known for his work with an amazing local fusion group called Merging Traffic. He also played in a band with Babyface called Tarnished Silver when they were both in high school. Anything you'd like to share about working with Rayford and what he added to your band at that time?
Rayford was a tremendous drummer. And a great musician. And, there's some musicians that play instruments and they're known as, well, this guy's a drummer, this guy's this. But there's some musicians that transcend their instruments because they're into music conceptually. They compose music and they're interested in how the band sounds. Rayford was like that. He might have got that from Babyface, too. Babyface is like that. Rayford holds the distinction in my band as out of all the drummers I have, people know that I love great drummers. And Rayford has gotten the most standing ovations of any drummer that I've ever played with. I mean, it's rare to see a drummer when he finishes playing a solo, people stand up and give him a standing ovation. And Rayford was that guy when he was younger. So, why? He just touches people with his drums.
And my final question on this theme of Indianapolis involves the great Wes Montgomery. Perhaps you know this is the 100th anniversary of the birth of Wes Montgomery, and that's a big theme at this year's Indie Jazz Fest. You recorded a tribute to Wes on your 2003 album, 1-2 to the Bass. The track was titled Just Cruisin'. Was Wes an influence on you? And any thoughts you want to share on the 100th anniversary of his birth?
Well, I could tell you there's not a bass. There's not a guy that's, say, over 45, and it's getting closer now. I might even have to say 50 now, but the majority of the people, I mean, Wes was obviously from another time, but if you played a string instrument, you were influenced by Wes, because Wes, there was nobody that played like as smooth as he did. And I loved how he didn't use a pick on the guitar. So that's why a lot of bass players like him. He used fingers and, so the whole family. I mean, Buddy and Monk Montgomery, the bass player. I mean, they were what a family. That must have been really something to grow up with so many brothers, and all of them were playing their butts off too. You know, so Wes was just. I still listen to Wes. I place the music in the house, and it's nice when I see young guitar players go, "Who's that?" You know, because it's really unusual way he played. He was real distinctive, and that's a specialty for me. When someone is very distinctive and they have their own sound, there's a certain sense of bravery, of being brave, because it's easy to copy someone and copy and be and do that, and you kind of fit in. But when someone comes along that's really, really different, and they stay with it, that shows a lot of courage.
You mentioned Monk, Wes's brother Monk, who was an incredible bass player. he's credited with introducing the electric bass to jazz during his time with the Lionel Hampton Band.
That's right.
Yeah.
Probably many of us wouldn't even be playing the electric bass as jazz musicians if it wasn't for him.
Just curious if you ever met Monk or if his work meant anything to you.
I'm not sure if I ever met him. I've been in a lot of circles and a lot of, when I was very young, I was kind of that guy standing in the corner there, you know. But his work meant a lot to me because he was the first guy out there and was very, I love the records that he played on, the ones he did with his brother, you know. It was just very, for the time when you listen to it, I mean, it was amazing. I mean, the electric bass has come along. I think it could possibly be the instrument that advanced the most, like from was. It might very well be. We have so many different techniques and so many different things now, so many different usages for the electric bass. When you go back and you go back in history, you know, you always go back to Monk Montgomery.
And Stanley, I want to ask about one of my favorite albums that you've made. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the release of your debut album as a leader, Children of Forever. And this is an extraordinary album featuring a very unique group of musicians. 50 years later, Children of Forever still sounds incredibly fresh, innovative, exciting. It reflects the work you were doing with Return to Forever, but it has its own distinct flavor, too. Does this hold any special significance for you, this 50th anniversary of the release of your debut record as a leader?
Well, it makes my bones hurt. 50 years, half a century. I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you didn't say it. It's been a half a century.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was a great time. I was so lucky, you know, back in those days. I was a young up-and-coming musician, and when I came to New York, I was kind of like just bright-eyed and just going for it, and you know, I think people that resonated with people, you know, I'd really studied my instrument prior to arriving in New York, and studied as much music as I could, and I was definitely prepared. And so when I got there, I think in those days there was a lot more opportunity for someone who was like me that came to New York specifically and was prepared. There was a lot of playing, a lot of clubs you could play in. I mean, I played every day, and then I did session work. And I met so many people, like whether it was Billy Cobham, Bob James, Donny Hathaway. I met Donny Hathaway. We played on Aretha Franklin records together. I mean, and so making an album was very, like, it was a normal thing to do. Yeah. I mean, I remember Chick Corea said, yeah, man, we should make an album. You know, let's get together. We'll call Pat in Philadelphia, Pat Martino. And it was a young guy I went to high school with, but we knew each other. His name was Arthur Webb, played flute. Lenny White, my old dearest friend, he was like the first guy I met when I came to New York. And so we all got together. Dee Dee Bridgewater sang, and the great, great Andy Bay sang. Mm-hmm. And we wrote music and put it together. And it was fun. It was all felt so natural, you know. So that album, when I think about that album, a lot of things come to mind that's all good.
Finally, Stanley, You'll be performing at Indie Jazz Fest on September 30th at the White River State Park. You'll be here with your band, In Forever. Anything you want to share about this upcoming performance in Indianapolis?
Well, you know, this band is, it has some of the best musicians that are out there right now. And I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to it. We got some new things, some older things we're going to play, and we're going to have a lot of fun.
Stanley, thank you so much for taking time to speak with me today. Huge fan of your work. I think you were one of the first jazz musicians that ever entered my consciousness, seeing you on TV as a kid. So it's incredible to have a chance to feature you on the show today. We've been listening to my recent conversation with the legendary bass player, Stanley Clark. He'll be performing at Indie Jazz Fest on September 30th. Let's listen to a track from Stanley's debut album as a session leader, from Children of Forever. This is Unexpected Days. That was Stanley Clark with Unexpected Days. He'll be performing at White River State Park on September 30th as part of Indie Jazz Fest. The percussionist, vocalist, and bandleader, Sheila E., will also be performing. Some music fans might be surprised to hear that Sheila E. is a featured performer at this year's Indie Jazz Fest. She's best known for her 80s pop hits, including Glamorous Life, written and co-produced by Prince. But Sheila has an extensive history as a jazz musician and Latin percussionist. She grew up in a musical West Coast family. Her father and uncles had significant careers in music, and by the age of 20, Sheila had recorded with major jazz icons. We discussed her roots in jazz and Latin music during a recent conversation. Tell me about your life growing up and what role music had in your life and your family's lives.
My dad's brothers definitely played. The first time I performed with my dad at 5 years old, my dad, his brother Coke, and his brother Phil were in the band, and they were called the Escovedo Brothers. Growing up in a musical family, my other uncles play as well, and then I have a lot of cousins that play. It's an extremely loud house.
Your dad, your uncle were deeply immersed in Afro-Cuban, Latin music, and I've heard that Tito Puente was sort of a godfather to you. Is that right? And what sort of role did he have in your early life?
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. Tito was my godfather. Tito would come to the Bay Area. He would bring his band, and then sometimes they would be in the house jamming and things like that, and he took us under his wings and really allowed us to be able to perform with not just his band, but with other Latin artists outside of, you know, the strict way of performing Latin music.
On that subject, traditional Latin Afro-Cuban music, it seems to me like you are really a pioneer as a Latin percussionist. You know, in the traditions of Afro-Cuban culture, Santeria, you know, for a long time, women were discouraged from playing the bata drum. Did you have many women role models in the world of Latin percussion?
The only person that I saw playing at an early age was my mom, because she played a little bit of percussion, and she would sing and dance, and she also played piano. So I was used to hearing her playing, and growing up in the Bay Area, there were so many women, especially in Berkeley. We would have these drum circles, and we would all get together, a lot of the local percussion players, and they would say, hey, we're meeting at the park on Saturday or Wednesday night or whatever. And people would just show up with their instruments, whatever you had, you would play.
It feels like you almost have dual identities as a musician. You know, you have this career as a huge pop artist, and then you have this history, extensive history, in jazz music. I mean, by the time you were a teenager in your early 20s, you were playing with icons of jazz, Billy Cobham, Bobby Humphrey, George Duke, Herbie Hancock. I mean, on and on and on. I could keep going. How did you, at such a young age, get on that level where these musicians like Herbie Hancock were taking you seriously?
Yeah, I had no idea. It was pretty natural at that point, which is why they hired me. Again, just watching my dad play it and him being my teacher. And then, you know, started sitting in with other people. And then Billy Cobham came along and produced our first album. And then being around Billy was insane. And that's how I met George Duke. And it just kept going on.
You issued, as I mentioned, your debut solo album, Glamorous Life, in 1984. You know, you became a massive star after this record comes out. Was that an easy transition for you to go from the session musician, the side player, to the star of the show?
It definitely came natural because we grew up in an environment with our family to most of the time be the entertainment for the family festivities. So it was always us, you know, pretending to be the Temptations or the Jackson 5 or James Brown, Stevie Wonder, and then, you know, listening to all the great music that comes from the Bay Area.
And your most recent albums reflect that rich mix of music that you're talking about. Tell me about the work you're doing today, and specifically what you're going to be presenting here on stage at Indie Jazz Fest.
It's a mixture of a little bit of everything. I mean, I'm always going to do that. That's true to who I am as an artist. And everyone there at the festival, they're just going to have a great time. Just be ready to dance, get up and participate in a Sheila E. concert, because my band is incredible and they're going to take you to a place you've never been before.
We've been listening to my recent conversation with Sheila E. She'll be performing at Indie Jazz Fest on September 30th. Go to indiejazzfest.net for more information. Let's listen to a track from Sheila E. that mixes the classic Latin sound of her early years with the electronic pop music she was creating with Prince during the 1980s. From her self-titled 1987 album, this is Sheila E. with Soul Salsa. Cultural Manifesto will return after this short break. I'm Kyle Long, and you're listening to Cultural Manifesto. For the remainder of this week's show, I'll preview the Lotus World Music and Arts Festival. It's happening from September 28th to October 1st in Bloomington. This year's festival lineup features over 20 international artists and groups. Go to lotusfest.org for more information. Let's start with music from La Perla, an all-female percussion group from Bogota, Colombia. The band's music mixes traditional Colombian rhythms with contemporary sounds. Let's hear an example. This is La Perla with Abre Caminos.
Por favor, hazlo por mí, quédate aunque sea un rato. Vamos a comer barato, vamos a fumar en el patio. Acariciemos al gato, realízame tus deseos, pongo mi cuerpo en tu plato. Caminemos sin zapato. No, no te vayas.
Me voy pa' dentro con mi machete.
That was La Perla with Abre Caminos. La Perla will be performing at this year's Lotus Fest in Bloomington, Indiana. So too will the legendary Haitian band Ram. Their music mixes rock and roll with voodoo songs and rhythms. Up next, we'll hear from Richard A. Morse of the legendary Haitian band Ram. Ram performed at the Indianapolis Haitian Flag Day Festival in Garfield Park in May of 2022. Morse grew up on the East Coast of the United States. His father was a white American academic, and his mother was a black Haitian musician and dancer. Before forming Ram in the 1980s, Morse had a background in punk and new wave music, and Morse brought the rebellious energy of punk rock into his work with Ram. And during our conversation, we discussed Ram's politically controversial lyrics, which have caused some problems for the group. You know, and I did want to ask you about the political commentary carried in Ram's music. This got you in some trouble over the years with the Haitian government and the military. I know you've had songs banned. You had the power cut off during your performances. Tell me about some of the conflicts you've been in with the music and the subjects you're singing about.
Yeah, we get in trouble. I mean, there was an attempt on our lives in Carnival at one point. We weren't invited to Carnival. We still don't get invited to very many carnivals. Someone said, you know, it's your lyrics. That's why you don't get invited to Carnival. And so I did a instrumental Carnival song called Symphonie du Ghetto. And we still didn't get invited. So someone said it sounded like a demonstration. We've had people, come into the hotel. We've had musicians arrested in the middle of a show. We've had our sound man come up, you know, while we're performing and telling us to end the show and get out of here. We've survived. We've survived all of this, though not everyone has survived all of this, because my chief of security was killed along with maybe half dozen other people in Carnival one year. You don't want to die. You want to give the messages. You want to say what's up. And so you're constantly sort of in a balance of saying what needs to be said. And, sometimes you have to duck. We've been fortunate. My wife constantly reminds me that, I have family, and a horse has a tail. I think that's the thing. It's like, you know, you can be jumping over the fire, but your tail can get burned. So, you know, I'm not as reckless as I may have been at one point.
But I've also met a lot of people that influence things. And so sometimes, you know, it's a phone call or it's a meeting or you talk to people instead of having to use social media or songs to get the message across. But you know, it's important that the message comes out. And it's important that people who are suffering, which is the great majority of Haitians, it's important that they know that they have people backing them up. And I think that's critical. I think the Haitian people like to know that they're supported and that there are people on their side. And that's really where, you know, I mean, it's the Haitian people that taught me about the music and the culture and the traditions. And so that's where I am. Those are the people who reached out to me. And so I, you know, whenever I'm in a situation, I try and reach out to them.
I'm curious, what's going through your mind when you're on stage and you're, you know, your sound man is coming up to you and telling you there's this threat. If you continue the performance, there's a threat of potential violence on you or your band. I mean, what? That just seems so foreign to me.
You
what
close
kind of,
it down.
Yeah.
You close it down. You say, well, he looks serious. Let's shut this down. You know.
But how does that influence your mindset going in, going forward with the band and playing the next gig, knowing that this could happen again? And yeah, kind of where are you at mentally when something like that's unfolding around you?
You know, this has been going on a long time.
Yeah.
We're musicians. And so, you know, people hire us to do gigs and that's what we do. And so, you know, that's just what we do. That's what it is. And so, you know, that's, we don't focus on the negative, we focus on the positive.
Let's listen to a classic track from Ram. From 2017, this is M'pral Dominan Simitye. That was the legendary Haitian band Ram. They'll be performing at this year's Lotus World Music and Arts Festival in Bloomington, Indiana. The Punjabi trumpet player and vocalist Sunny Singh will also perform at this year's Lotus Fest. Sunny appeared on Cultural Manifesto in 2021 as part of our ongoing series Rebel Music with Carla Lopez Owens. Let's listen back to an excerpt from Carla's conversation with Sunny Singh.
Sunny, our listeners in Indianapolis will know you for your work with the Brooklyn-based Bhangra brass band Red Bharat. You have performed here in Indianapolis many times, but you have also been creating solo music under your own name, and we're going to listen to some of your music today on Rebel Music. Rebel Music explores the relationship between music and activism. And in your bio, you refer to yourself as both a musician and an activist. And so, in addition to your amazing career in music, you're also active as a writer and an educator, focusing on issues related to oppression and racism. Can you tell us how music and activism have been connected in your life?
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks so much for having me on. It's exciting to be a part of this segment because, as you mentioned, music and activism and struggles for social and economic justice are kind of what my life is all about. And for me, I've always been on these sort of parallel trajectories as both a musician and at times a community organizer, a movement activist, and certainly a popular educator and facilitator. And in my new musical project, I'm really trying to bring these different parts of myself together in a more explicit way. But, you know, I think at its core for me, what's so special about music as a tool for social justice is that, you know, us musicians are not really in the work of, you know, creating strategies for campaigns or messaging or mobilizing people in sort of a strategic, analytical way, which are all super important things if we really want to fight and win social justice in our lifetimes. But us musicians are more in the work of making people feel things, right? And that's something, I think, just a special ability that we have, really, as artists in general. And so for me, it's really fun to get to channel those feelings and tap into my own feelings as well as my audience's feelings with my music, and then I can still get into my strategy analytical brain as an organizer at times as well.
And your music is rooted in the traditions of Punjabi culture. I know that you grew up in North Carolina as a child of immigrant parents, and I understand you were singing Punjabi music and Sikh devotional music as a child. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first music I ever played before I ever picked up a trumpet was Sikh devotional music, which we call kirtan. So I was playing harmonium, which is sort of like a pump organ instrument you play sitting on the ground, and tabla, which are South Asian hand drums, and singing this beautiful devotional music. The Sikh scriptures are made up of music. They're meant to be sung. So music was sort of instilled at me at a very, very young age. And Gurbani, or Sikh devotional poetry, is really rooted in, really compatible with this idea of music and activism, right? The whole core of the meaning is really about this divine energy, some might even call it love, being a force that connects us all, right? So if anything is standing in the way of that connection, if anything is standing in the way of dignity, respect, and justice, we do everything in our power to fight against it, right? And transform it and to move towards liberation. And so that's sort of the heart of Sikh philosophy. Those are the values that I was raised with. And so it made so much sense to me after a few decades of playing lots of different kinds of music to return to kind of how it all started for me, which was Sikh devotional music. And that's kind of the core of the new project that I've launched in the last year.
Yeah, and you've kind of already answered this, but we're going to listen to Koi Balram next. Can you tell us about the song?
Yeah, for sure. So the words are taken from the Sikh scriptures written by Guru Arjan. And basically what the words are saying is that the divine is referred to, or God is referred to, by so many different names, like, right, in South Asia, Ram, Allah, Kudal, all these different names that different religions refer to God as, and often are the cause for wars, the cause for oppression, the cause for dehumanization, right? Our way is better than your way. And Sikh philosophy and this piece is sort of saying that's absurd, right? We're all talking about the same thing here, and that same thing connects us all, right? So the idea is that we should do everything in our power to uplift each other, right? All different religions, all different faiths are paths to the same divine. And so for me, releasing this song last year when I did, I really wanted to uplift the ways that Hindu nationalism is playing out in India, right? Right now in India, we have a government that really sees Hinduism as sort of upper caste Brahmanism as the quote unquote right way to be Indian, or the only way to be Indian, and religious minorities like Muslims especially, but also Sikhs and Christians and many others are facing a whole lot of oppression. And so I really wanted to highlight that issue, and also the protest movement against Hindu nationalism when I released the song.
Karin, 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 Kirpa Dar Rahim.
That was Sunny Singh with Koi Balram.
Sunny is one of the 20-plus international artists performing at this year's Lotus World Music and Arts Festival in Bloomington, Indiana. Go to lotusfest.org for more information. That's all the time we have for this week. Let's end with music from the French Occitan vocal and percussion collective San Salvador. They'll perform at Lotus Fest on September 29th and 30th. Check out the Cultural Manifesto podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Cultural Manifesto is hosted and produced by me, Kyle Long. Thank you for listening.
Count them in a bella, 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 count them in a bella